Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gundling, JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
What's going on, man?
Doing well?
I have a gift for you.
You do?
We should do this now as we've got a beefy pod.
Yeah, it is. This is a big one.
So why don't you tell the folks what's coming up?
Well, Craig Burley is going to join us, one of our favorite people. I was thinking the other day, there's so much going on in the league, and we haven't really talked to him in a while. So, you know, we're into a new year. Now it feels like that he's kind of a natural person for us to want to talk to. So I'm excited about that. Craig is always tremendous.
He is, and he will never be a new year, new me guy. He will always be himself.
Well, we'll find out. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe he thinks he plays too much golf, wants to spend more time with his family. Who knows? I doubt it.
Dude, come on.
And then, JJ, we actually have a new feature that we're going to unveil today.
I'm excited.
Are you? Because that's kind of like an S-eating grin that you have on your face right now.
I know the feature will be good. I'm worried about the drop that you're using to introduce it. I've told you before, music beds are my area, and I don't like when you go off on your own.
It's called In the Club, and it's basically going to be, because we believe in, like, the podcast space.
Yeah.
Like, we believe in this podcast and podcasts in general, and we like to promote people listening to podcasts. There's room for us and tons of other ones. So we have decided that when we feel like there's a certain club that is kind of general interest, maybe more than usual, we are going to search out for podcasts that are specific to that club, and we're going to ask people who host those podcasts to come on, and we're going to have a conversation, and we will debut that feature today. I'm excited about it. We're going to debut it with Wolves because they've had a really interesting run of late, having beaten Spurs. They just knocked Liverpool out of the FA Cup, but then they did Wolves things and lost to Crystal Palace.
And they're just a fascinating club in general, the way they're made up, their sudden rise to prominence, although they were really good before. So we're going to talk to Tim Spears, ENS Wolves podcast.
That's right.
Which is going to be good because we are kind of fascinated by Wolves.
Yeah.
And it's not just because we live in America and we love animal-based teams.
No, that's true. You say you have a gift for me because we've been down this road before.
It's
I'm
not
still
wrapped.
Waiting for my birthday present from a few years ago.
Oh, yeah, that's never happening.
Fair enough. You did already show me a picture of this.
I did, but this is the unveil.
Oh, look at that.
The 1989 Tottenham jersey.
Beautiful. I love it, truly.
You'll wear that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
All right.
Absolutely.
I want pictures. Nothing weird.
I might sleep in it tonight, quite frankly.
Okay, you made it weird.
I love it. Thank you.
No problem.
So they're fine. It's January 9th, and our holiday gift giving has finally ended. I'm going to put this back over there, though.
Yeah, don't throw it. Fold it gently.
Oh, my God. It's a sweatshirt. We start with the Carabao Cup. And
get the noise.
I'll look for it while you're talking. But earlier today, look, I don't know what to say about this 9-0 thrashing from Manchester City. I guess it was good for Gabriel Jesus' confidence, a guy who maybe wasn't scoring at quite the rate that Man City fans would have liked.
Yeah, sure.
He put four in today.
How about Phil Foden's confidence?
Yeah.
Not good enough to start against ninth in League One opposition. Incredible.
All I can say is thank God there's a second leg. Don't we need more of this?
Mark Ogden, who often makes excellent points on ESPN FC, said there is no need for a second leg. Played the semifinals, one game, the two games at a neutral venue, and it's just one game, you're in or you're out.
I genuinely don't know why the Carabao Cup does have a two-leg semifinal.
Especially when they've done all they can to avoid replays. There's no replays in the earlier rounds.
Right.
I don't know why that's come about. Do you want some stats quickly on this game?
Sure.
Up to Joe, 1986, Burton Albion's 9-0 defeat is the heaviest League Cup defeat by any side since Liverpool beat Fulham 10-0. Back in September 1986, and is the largest ever margin of defeat in the semi-final of the competition. Now, I was looking for a nifty way, because I don't want to talk about this game. It was a massacre. Mm-hmm. Although, I will say, at 1-0 down,
I know, Burton had a golden opportunity.
Oh, harness. He couldn't harness his ability to put the ball in the net, and he shanked it. But whatever. So, just look at it this way. Ben Robinson, insurance broker, is the 98% shareholder of Burton Albion. He's the de facto owner. Mm. He's ninth in League One. Sheikh Mansour, well, who is he? Deputy Prime Minister / member of the royal family of an entire country.
Yeah.
All right, that is the difference there, folks.
Yeah, and I think that played itself out today. So, yeah, I mean, 9-0, that's, like we said, don't have much to say on that. The other game, though, on Tuesday, Tottenham and Chelsea was far more interesting. 1-0, it goes to Spurs. They win the first leg as it heads back to Stamford Bridge for the second. I guess the big talking point to come out of this is the VAR decision that wound up going Tottenham's way.
At the time, with the lines we were shown, which we were told was the view that the VAR referee would have, every decision looked perfect. But Maurizio Sarri had his laptop with another angle that threw that all into flux.
Yeah. Look, I don't know what the answer is here. The number one thing that I would say is, when in doubt, they just have to let the play itself out. Like in the NFL, you know, the referees are told, if you're not sure if it's a fumble or not, let the fumble happen, let the play evolve the way it's going to, and then we can go back and fix it if need be. Because Maurizio Sarri does have a point. Now, I don't know if this would have changed anything in the situation with Harry Kane, but he's suggesting that when the flag goes up, you know, players stop defending, and you know it changes the outcome of what would have happened when they see that flag.
So if it's marginal, the linesman's got to leave
the flag
down. Right.
Then just leave the flag down. And for all the belly aching that is coming from Sarri and even Mauricio Pochettino, who benefited from this, who, by the way, was speaking out of both sides of his mouth at the end of this game when he's talking about how much he dislikes VAR, but then he talks about how important technology and evolution is to the game. Well, which one is it? Because it can't be both. Look, you know I'm pro-VAR guy. We're in, like, the infancy of this in England. So, you know, they can complain about it all they want. Nothing is perfect the second it comes out of the gate.
But also, it's going back to, what do we want this for? Do we want it to make perfect decisions? It's probably not going to do that. It would have got one part of that decision wrong. Remember, they reviewed the Harry Kane, the penalty incident. Forget the offside, because the offside, for a start, we need to go back and talk about, well, what part of your body? Is the chest the offside, or should it not be the legs, the lower torso? I mean, what part?
That is clear, is it not?
No, if your head is out in front and your legs are behind.
Isn't it, like...
This is so stupid.
You're right. But it's what can you legally score a goal with?
Right.
All right. So your head, chest. Hands and arms, essentially.
Right. But the point of it is, you're not going to get everything right. And that's kind of why I was anti-VAR in the first place. Because that's just the flow and the rhythms of the game. And I actually thought they got pretty much everything right. But then you see people today saying that Harry Kane dived.
I've seen that.
I think you could watch that a couple of times and not be sure.
I don't know. I didn't think that it was a dive. You've got somebody.
There you go.
You've got somebody barreling down on his legs. What is he really supposed to do?
Now, I would say that if Chelsea have a better angle of the offside, why on earth does the VAR referee not have that? Does the VAR official not have that?
I have no idea.
That doesn't make sense.
I truly don't know.
But look, you can't just throw it out because of, I mean, it's been experimented with. That is the whole point. You've got to stick with it and see where it goes. Even someone like me who's not 100% sure about it.
Yeah, and look, even if the technology is, remember, I think they still use these at the Olympics for like the 100-meter dash. There's this camera that's on like a track alongside the runners as they're going, and it basically is just keeping pace with the pack of runners. Like, I don't know, am I thinking too, like, is this too expensive? Now, we're talking about the Premier League, so nothing is too expensive. Can't they have some camera technology like that that can kind of keep track with where that linesman is?
Gundling
on the
wants
field?
Robots. Sorry, have you
not? It's a camera.
See, this
not
is
a robot.
This is a guy from, you know, you're going too far. This is a guy who hasn't seen Terminator 2.
So what?
When Skynet became active, it all started out with a robot. Now, that's fine. The robot will be okay. And then it built up and it built up and it built up.
Thank you for taking this conversation seriously.
And then Skynet became self-aware and the planet was destroyed. And that's what you want.
Well, let's talk about then another element of this game.
Andrew, just to answer your question. Yes, you could have something on a chart.
Of course
you could.
I blocked you out a while ago. In terms of the game itself, Chelsea, like, I think you have to look at this and say that...
Well, first of all, look at it and say it's the first leg. And there's no way Sarri can go and play this kind of false nine with Hazard again. The idea of the false nine is that Hazard will start out in the centre forward position and then drop off. But that presupposes the idea someone's going to fill in and make runs beyond him. That never happened. In fact, Christensen had the best chance for Chelsea in the entire game in the second half. they're just blunt. Well,
and they
there.
Had like a deflected cross.
Well, that Gazzaniga did a great job on that.
Who was very good once again.
I'd almost play Hudson-Odoi down the middle. Do that. Do something. It's not working with Hazard.
It is amazing how, you know, all of the questions that people have about Chelsea, they really did just like perfectly manifest themselves in this game. I mean, it's just, you know, can they score? Can they finish? Are you relying too much on midfielders to provide goals?
You text me in the second half with you know, the sense of dread and worry that is in every text you sent me.
Which was justified, though.
They're knocking on the door. They're definitely going to score.
I said it feels like a goal is coming.
And what did I text you?
You made fun of me. You said something like, they can't finish. Don't worry, you're fine.
And that's exactly how it played out.
And I'll tell you what, Tottenham were basically daring them. I mean, I think Pochettino has faith in his defending.
He also has faith in his break. And Spurs always looked dangerous on the break.
Yeah, although they basically were content to say to Chelsea, all right, we will let you possess the ball and, you know, we dare you to try to score against us because we don't think that you have somebody out here who can finish. Now, they're playing with fire. It is still Chelsea. They do still have great players. But once again, everyone looks at the failure to... I mean, they're not playing Alvaro Morata in these games, and it looks like now he could be on his way out. There's talk of Gonzalo Higuain coming into Chelsea. Here's what Gab Marcotti had to say about Higuain to Chelsea.
Gonzalo Higuain, if he comes to Chelsea, he will instantly be the fourth highest paid player in the Premier League. He makes an enormous amount of money. He's the wrong side of 30. He's got several years left. He's not going to take a pay cut to come here. It just doesn't seem to make any kind of sense for Chelsea to go and bring somebody in that position.
He continues here, but we'll talk about that in a sec, but it's kind of a twofold thing. He then also says that Chelsea right now might be hesitant to move Morata.
I think the reality is, from Chelsea's end, while they're not averse to dealing Morata somewhere else, if you get a shop window or whatever, the fact is Chelsea aren't going to move Morata unless they bring in another center forward. It's unthinkable for them to go through the rest of the season with only Giroud. They're not going to bring Tammy Abraham back on loan. It doesn't look that way, and not sure he's the answer either. So, he can talk all he wants, but I don't see them dealing Morata until they have a replacement in.
This is becoming, for Chelsea, a real desperate times call for desperate measures situation because they've missed the Champions League this season. They're right on the edge right now, living dangerously in that fourth spot with Arsenal right behind them and with Manchester United suddenly looking totally rejuvenated. Clubs like Chelsea don't miss Champions League's two consecutive seasons. That's got to be deemed unacceptable for them. So you do wonder, with this impotence that they have at that central forward position, will they do something desperate, even if it's not necessarily in their best interest, like going out and signing an Higuain?
Yeah, and it smacks of getting the band back together, because let's not forget, he did play under Sarri and play extremely well. 6 goals this season for AC Milan. I don't know, Andrew. I think they have to do it because it makes sense. And if you look at the strikers that they've brought in before in January, the, we'll say, longer-term projects, like when they bought Fernando Torres, he was at his peak, and that didn't work out. Mm. Shevchenko probably was moving towards the downside of his career, and it certainly proved that way at Chelsea. Higuain is a risk in the sense that he is the wrong side of 30. But they need something, and they've got to do something.
They have nothing.
And what are their options as well? And how much... They've just spent that amount of money on Pulisic as well, who's going to come in the summer. I don't think this is as crazy an idea. It's short-termism, but it makes sense considering the peril that they're in.
It is funny. You look at them, you know, you mentioned Pulisic and him coming in at that price tag. And now you look at Hudson-Odoi, who might be going out to Bayern Munich. I mean, it keeps going back and forth, and I don't know who is leaking what. It might be Hudson-Odoi's camp that wants everyone to believe that Bayern Munich has this dramatic price tag. But, like, this refusal to look from within, like, this right. idea that, no, there can only be good stuff out there. Like,
everything
these clubs that operate that way, let's look at Chelsea. And let's look, okay, they're not scoring goals. Let's talk about some of the young players that they have allowed to leave, like De Bruyne, like Salah, like Lukaku. Like... You don't think these players would be helping them right now?
Everything within is unproven. Everything within is scary. Everything within is a risk. Without, you're just going... The only thing I would say, Andrew, is the success that Sarri had with Higuain in terms of scoring goals Can he just say, roll the dice and say, get the band back together for a few months?
Yeah, let's secure a top four spot.
Right, and that's the
thinking.
And then
we'll reassess in the summer.
That can be the only thinking.
Desperate times, desperate
measures.
But
the money is crazy. Because don't forget, he's already on loan from Juventus. So that will be one of the most complicated contracts to negotiate.
Yeah. We're going to talk a little bit. That's the Carabao Cup, and you'll be happy to know, JJ. There it is. I found it.
It's not me. It's the listeners.
I know.
They
I know.
Like the noises.
Yeah, I'm well aware. They get very angry when they don't appear. We will talk a little bit about the FA Cup shortly, the top story there being Liverpool being knocked out by Wolves. Before we get into the FA Cup, we do want to talk a little bit more about Wolves specifically, and that means, JJ, it's time for In the Club.
Go, 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 show.
What are you looking at me like that?
Is that
for?
JP Delacamera?
No, is he in dark?
Oh,
what's the matter with you?
Oh, it was just so distorted.
No, it was him saying goal. Over top of 50 Cent saying go.
I mean, it works.
Well,
it's not your best work.
All right, I can take that. Not everything needs to be number one.
You're angry. You're like, you could do none of this.
Well, that is a fact.
Wow.
All right, do it.
I could learn.
Okay.
I'm going to learn.
How many years has it been that we've been trying to get you to be able to run this on your own when I go on my dramatic trips around the world?
Wow. You went there.
We're going to talk more about Wolves right now. And we're excited to do this. Like we said, we want to explore other clubs, podcasts. And when there's a club of particular interest to us, we want to dive deeper. So we're going to do that right now with Tim Spears of the E&S Wolves podcast. Tim joins us now. Tim, what's up, man? How are you?
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
We're good. We're excited about doing this, getting these podcasts underway here with different clubs and having a look at them. And we wanted to start with Wolves because they've kind of emerged, I think, as one of the more interesting sides in the Premier League so far this season. Just looking recently, you've got Liverpool knocking them out of the cup this past week, a win over Spurs during the festive period, beat Chelsea not so long ago, draws against other top six sides, but it's the same club that has losses to the likes of Cardiff, Huddersfield, Brighton. So I'm just curious, as kind of a starting point here, supporters of Wolves right now, are they frustrated with some of that? Are they thrilled by how things have gone? I'm very curious about how they're perceived right now by their own fan base.
For a club that spent, I think, four of the past 34 years in the top flight, all of those fighting relegation, they are absolutely ecstatic. Believe me, it's been a fantastic, successful season so far. Probably better than anyone could have hoped, actually. And there has been a little bit of frustration over the fact that they've lost to some of the so-called smaller teams, but it's mostly just a bit of a tactical issue that Nuno Espirito Santo's got to sort out, because they've got such a talented squad and such an exciting group of young players that really a lot of them are going to have big futures in the game, and they've got the quality and the ability to beat some of the best teams in the country. I mean, the so-called Big Six in English football, Wolves have now drawn or beaten every single one of them. Now they've beaten Liverpool in the cup. You know, as you say, they've beaten Spurs and Chelsea in the league. It shows you the quality they've got. And where they've come unstuck is, where teams have tried to stop them playing. And teams, that they've been a victim of their own success in that way, because teams have got to come up with an alternative plan to stop them playing. Because if you try and take Wolves on, then there's a good chance that they're going to get a result against you, because they're so impressive going forward and also pretty good defensively. So there have been a couple of missed opportunities in terms of points, but overall, you know, you've got to remember where this club has come from. You know, 5 years ago, they were in League One and going absolutely nowhere. And the whole place, since Fos and the Chinese owners have come in, only in 2016, the whole place is completely lifted off. And the sky's the limit, really. So, no, everyone's having the time of their lives. It's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, Tim, you may have answered this already when you say everyone's having the time of their lives, but how comfortable are Wolves fans in their nouveau riche skin? Because, as you said, they spent, I mean, so few years in the top flight in the last 30-so years. I mean, is there a faction of the fans who are concerned by the takeover by Fosun, maybe hanker for the days of Dean Saunders?
Well, I mean, Wolves have always kind of revelled in that kind of underdog mould, and they love being written off. So they're in an unusual position now where, you know, they're watching match of the day or any kind of highlights program on a weekend, and you get in the likes of Alan Shearer and Gary Lineker praising them and saying what a fantastic team Wolves have got and where has this come from. So everybody's kind of getting used to it, really, because we've all been brought up on tales of Wolves as being one of the best teams in the world. You know, no exaggeration to say, you know, a long time ago, admittedly, but in the 1950s, you know, they were one of the best teams in the world. And then in the 70s, you know, they got to cup finals, they won a couple of league cups, got to a UEFA Cup final. So that's what the next generations have all been brought up on, these tales. And then they gave it such a good go in the 90s. Sir Jack Hayward, the self-made local millionaire, came in and tried to take them back to that promised land, and it never quite happened. And it's been a succession of near misses over the past 20 years, and everybody's completely forgotten about them, you know, from a kind of a global perspective. But now they're back, and in an unusual way. You know, I think ideally everyone would want it to be a local owner and local players and local manager, but you know, this is football in 2019. This doesn't happen anymore. So they'll take it whatever way it comes. And if that's with a team of seven Portuguese players, then so be it. They frankly do not care.
Tim, I'm curious, because it feels like Wolves, I don't know if it's fair to say that they're at a crossroads in terms of the kind of club that they're going to be, but I almost sort of view them that way, even though they're just freshly promoted this year. Where do they go from here now? I mean, do they become like a real player, like a buying club, or are they a club that's going to just kind of be desperate to keep hold of the talent that they currently have? I'm curious what the next phase is for their success.
Well, I think you're absolutely spot on, to be honest. You know, everyone's been enjoying the ride, and it has been a rapid rise, you know. Two seasons ago, they were mid-table in the Championship. And since Nuno came in last summer, it's been nothing but success. You know, they ran away with the Championship last season, and they've continued that this year. But all along, you know, the question in the back of my mind has certainly been, you know, what will happen to these players? Ruben Neves was never a Championship footballer. It was a miracle that they managed to get into Molineux. And obviously, there was only one reason that they managed to get into Molineux, and that's Jorge Mendes. And it's the same with Nuno. You know, the only reason he's here is because of Mendes. And it's all working very well. And they've got a lot of very, very young, exciting players with huge potential. But yeah, there will come a time when either, because Wolves' rapid rise, it can't continue to forever. Yes, they say they want to become the next Man City or whatever in however many years' time. But there will be a ceiling at some point soon. So what happens then? Does Nuno move on? Does Neves, Jota, Cody, all these star players, you know, do they all move on? And what happens with the replacements that come in? You know, Wolf struck gold with Nuno, but the two managers before him, under Fosun, you know, were both failures. So it is a crossroads. I'd love to say it can continue on a kind of a consistent rise, but there are going to have to be some issues here as far as when these players move on, and in particular when Nuno moves on, because Him and Jorge Mendes are so closely linked. I mean, they've been friends for 20 years. Nuno was Mendes' first ever client as an agent, so they've got very close ties together. And that's why this project has been so successful, because recruitment and the playing staff, it's all intrinsically linked. No problem. You've got Nuno, Mendes, and a host of other key players behind the scenes. So what happens next? It's a very interesting question. But they've certainly got the resources to continue it. You know, Fosun's pockets are pretty limitless, and they are not shy in investing their money on and off the field. You know, they've made big improvements to the training ground, to the whole infrastructure of the club. The stadium's going to be next. So it's not just a 2-3 year project to get Wolves in the Premier League and sell them on, which, by the way, they could. I mean, they bought Wolves for 30 million. You see some clubs in the Premier League being touted as 300 million, you know, for sale now. Fosun could easily make a quick profit, but they're not. They're looking longer term than that. So the future is exciting either way.
Tim, you think of all the players that have come into Wolves and the high-profile players, Rui Patricio, players like that, but it's actually been somebody who goes back to the League One days and ever-present who picked up the PFA Fans Player of the Month award in September, Matt Doherty. Is he... Because he kind of transcends and kind of existed across the different iterations of Wolves, does he have some kind of cult hero status among the fans?
He does. Although a lot are quick to get on his back whenever he makes a mistake. I think he's kind of associated with with the sort of the bad old days in a little way, which is a shame for him. Connor Cody's more of the cult hero of the pair, who's been with them since the championship in 2015. And has done very well at centre-half. But for me, you know, Doherty's story is one of the big success stories of recent years. Came to them from Bohemians 2010-11, $75,000, I think he was.
Mm.
And now I've seen links with him with Spurs today. He'd be in most people's Premier League team of the season, I think. Pretty much the best right-back out there, almost. Certainly one of the most consistent, chipping in with goals and assists. The best thing for me about him is that he's displayed the best form of his whole career in the Premier League. You know, he's improved his game year on year. He's thrived under Nuno. He's very, very well respected by the whole fan base. I wouldn't say cult hero, but he certainly hasn't been recognised as much as he should have done. He's quite an unsung hero, actually. But he's got a fantastic attitude to the game. Had some tough competition for that right back slot over the years, but he's always stuck at it, and his kind of loyalty and his hard work has now been rewarded. I'm absolutely chuffed a bit for him. He's been a massive success story this season.
Well, Tim, good stuff, man. You guys have Manchester City next on Monday, which I'm guessing has you feeling a lot more confident than if it was, say, Fulham at home or something like that.
Yeah, no problem. Honestly, no problem. Well, they picked up a point against Man City earlier in the season.
Right.
Even last season when they were in the Championship, they went there in the Carabao Cup and took them all the way to penalties. I think they were the first team to keep a clean sheet against City for about 6 months at that time. So they've got pedigree. Honestly, they will not fear it. They will go there. They will relish it. They'll relish the space that will be given to them. They'll take Man City on. They won't sit back. And they'll back themselves to score, and they'll back themselves to get a result. It's a really refreshing attitude, because so often you'll see struggling teams play against Man City or Liverpool and try and defend and play out the impossible 0-0. It just never happens. Whereas Wolves, they go for it. And I think that's why they've attracted so many kind of neutral fans this season.
Yeah, Tim, before we let you go, what kind of town is Wolverhampton? And, you know, like, if you're going on a night out there, would you go, is it a big place to get a curry? Is it, you know, what kind of, for the American fan who'd like to travel and see Wolves, what kind of a town is it?
I'll take you guys out. There's a good night out in Wolverhampton, honestly. Well, traditionally, it's an industrial town. You know, it's in the heart of the Black Country, which gets its name from the industrial age back in the Victorian age and whatnot, coming out of the pit and whatever with smoke on their faces, and very kind of polluted town. But it's kind of reinventing itself a little bit in recent years. It's often in Birmingham's shadow because it's only 20 miles from Birmingham. So, and Birmingham's second city in England. So it's often in Birmingham's shadow. But you can get a great curry. Alan Shearer went to the most popular curry house when he was here the other day. Plenty of nice ales knocking around. Banksy's Bitter. It's very famous if you like a bitter. Mm. And we've got Pop World playing all your cheesiest music hits in the morning. it's a very kind of down-to-earth, humble kind of city, which doesn't really fit with the way that Fosun are going in terms of wanting to be a big, ambitious club with high aspirations. You know, it doesn't really fit with the town, but they are trying to change the image a little bit. It's a good night. You guys should come out.
I'm in. I'm sold. Let's do it. ESPN, I'm sure, will foot the bill for
this. They'll foot the bill.
We're going on a binge weekend in Wolverine.
We're going to see Tim Spears. Don't worry about it.
Well, Tim, great stuff, man. We appreciate the time. We'll be keeping an eye on Wolves, obviously, throughout the remainder of the season. They've been so fascinating so far this year, and I'm sure we'll catch up again soon. Thanks, man.
Cheers, guys. Good to speak to you.
Our thanks to Tim Spears.
I'd make that trip.
Yeah, I don't know anything about that city. I'm actually glad that you asked him.
Yeah, it's kind of the industrial area of...
Where, he said it's 20 minutes outside Birmingham,
I had no idea till I checked the map how it's super close to Birmingham, and they would hate Villa and Birmingham and West Brom. They would hate them. So it's so good for them to be in the position they're in and to see Villa in the division below them.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to take a super quick break. Our thanks again to Tim Spears, the E&S Wolves podcast. When we come back... A little bit of FA Cup. 3 minutes. I've got the clock here in front of me, so don't you dare go over it, because that's it. We're already up against it, I can tell.
I won't.
And then Craig Burley is going to join us as well. That's always fun. Red cards, man of the match. It's great. You're a crazy person if you turn this off now. Stay with us. Oh, back now on Caught Offside. We're going to speak with Craig Burley in mere moments. But before we do that, JJ, it was an interesting FA Cup third round.
It was, surely.
I have 3 minutes here on the clock. That's what we're willing to devote because it was the third round. See, that works out just perfectly. You ready? 3 minutes?
Yeah, I got it.
It's on the clock.
So we begin with Gillingham upsetting Cardiff, which is kind of good for me and you who've fallen out with Neil Warnock of late, who's had a pop at both Liverpool and Tottenham. And
he's insufferable.
He is insufferable. Warnock fields a heavily changed side and claims at full time they wouldn't have scored in a million years. But the complaining was not done there about his own team. He also got a complaint in about the time it took his players to receive treatment, Danny Ward and Kadeem Harris in particular. Quote, I think if you're a medical person and you're wanting a stretcher, you'd be there quicker. If he'd had a heart attack, he'd be dead now. I think they've got a lot to learn. Whatever division you're in, you are concerned about your players if they don't get the right treatment. And we are waiting for a stretcher for I don't know how long, but that's life. So that's Warnock complaining. Bristol City 1, Huddersfield Town 0. Not a ton on this one, except I would say from watching the highlights, Bristol City thoroughly deserved their win. Del Poitra with a big missed chance for Huddersfield, but Brownhill caused Huddersfield Town huge big problems, massive problems in the second half. Overall, a deserved win, I would say. And Wagner probably happy to be out of the cup because
maybe
he's back, bigger fish to fry.
Yeah.
Oldham Athletic beat Fulham 2-1. 59 places separated the two sides at kickoff. 59 places. It should be remembered that once upon a time, this Oldham were the big team and Fulham were the small team, and that's not the case right now. But Oldham took Fergie's United to a replay in 1994 in the semi-final. Oh my God, are we up already?
No, that's the halfway point. Oh, by the way, if your logic to Huddersfield probably applies to Fulham as well.
Right.
Like, now it's embarrassing to lose to Oldham. But
this, I mean, Mitrovic misses a penalty in this one.
Yeah.
So, or rather, the penalty was saved. Jonathan Pearce's call on the goal is pretty good.
Well, 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 what a topsy-turvy tie. In comes a cross here from the centre. It's in! It's Callum Lang! It's 2-1 for Oldham! 4 minutes after Fulham squandered the penalty, and the lead two side are creating a giant killing here.
And they did.
Yeah.
2-1. Excellent win for Oldham and probably brings them back to the old days of that cup run to the semi-final in 94. Newport County 2, Leicester City 1. Porrick Ammond with the winning penalty. For Newport County, former Sligo Rovers striker with the winner.
Really?
Huh? Yes. He also scored against which Premier League side last season? I believe it was in the fourth round.
Newport? Everton?
Tottenham Hotspur.
Oh, oh yeah. We talked about last week how they played last year.
Yeah, yeah, we did. We did indeed.
Completely have blocked that from my memory.
And Eric Beck. Andrew and JJ, thanks for the awesome work you do on the podcast. I wanted to ask you about what's happened to the FA Cup. Everything I've heard in the past few years of watching the Premier League is that the FA Cup is nowhere near as prestigious as it used to be. What happened?
I actually have a big problem with this this theory that the FA Cup is no longer relevant, as our clock will expire here. But we're going to go on. I want to talk about this a little bit.
Well, I would just say that United pulling out of the Cup in 2000 to compete in the World Club Cup was the start of the diminishing of this once august trophy.
Here's my problem with this. We are in a bubble. We are in a Premier League bubble, 20 clubs. That's what we care about. JJ, do you know how many clubs entered this tournament? I don't know what the number is this year, but last year, I believe, what was it, 737?
Correct.
There's over 700 teams that take part in this tournament. The Premier League is 20, all right? Maybe this isn't just about the EPL. Like, we're so stuck in this world where what, you know, if it doesn't matter to Tottenham, then it doesn't matter. If it doesn't matter to the people at Old Trafford, then it doesn't matter. There are, what would you say, hundreds of thousands, maybe even millions of other fans of other clubs that this tournament still means a lot to.
Yes.
There's more to British and English football than just what happens in the Premier League. And if we have one tournament, just one tournament, that kind of allows other people, other fans, to have their moment in the sun, that's fine.
Yes.
Like, it's still relevant to them. There's a lot of them. I'm totally fine with it. Look, if Premier Leagues want to play weekend squads earlier in this tournament, that's fine with me too. It's free for them to do that. But these people talking about how this tournament, oh, it's outstayed its usefulness. Get out of here. Who are you to make that decision? Talk to somebody who's an Oldham supporter or a Gillingham supporter. What are they feeling getting to watch their team knock off a Premier League side? This is a thrilling moment for them. One of the most fun moments they've probably ever had as a fan. You know, and people talking about how, oh, the game should only be played at the grounds of these smaller clubs. Premier League teams should have no home games. I understand the logic in that, but don't you think it's fun for a non-league side to maybe have the chance to go to Old Trafford? Like, I don't
but
like that idea either.
It's more than
I know.
That.
It's about them getting paid and what that means to them.
A portion of the gate, which could change
but
this club's...
I don't know. I think it's fine. Like, I think we all need to just relax. Okay, the third round didn't matter a ton to Arsenal fans or United fans. Okay, deal with it. Like, not every game is going to carry the meaning that you want it to have. Later in the tournament, you'll care a lot if your club is still taking part in this tournament. But early on, this is fun for smaller teams. I don't know when we got away from like Cinderella stories no longer carrying any meaning, that it just is all about, oh, I thought we liked that stuff. Okay, I guess I was wrong. We only like when City play Chelsea. All right, fine. That's how it is now.
It's part of the brainwashing. It's part of the behemoth that the Premier League has become, that we are so tunnel vision on this thing. I agree with you.
Yeah, like I used to say that about England. People would say, oh, it's a nuisance. You know, not for fans of smaller clubs. Like, this is their chance to root for a Harry Kane or a Raheem Sterling.
Newport County have just knocked out the Premier League champions of 3 years ago, of 2 years ago.
Maybe this
That's
is
exceptional.
Like, yeah, maybe this is an old-fashioned part of me, which doesn't usually rear its head on this podcast, but I would not change anything about this tournament. It's fine. Let's see, JJ. Should we talk to Craig now?
Let's do that.
He's waiting. One of our favorite people to have on the podcast. Like I said, a new year.
New year, old Burley.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I don't know. Maybe it's a new Burley. Maybe he has New Year's resolutions and he's going to be a changed man.
I heard him on ESPN FC the last few days. Nothing's changed.
Craig, what's up, man? How are you?
Hello, boys. Happy New Year. Same old me. Same old rubbish.
That's what we want.
Craig, I wanted to start with Liverpool. Today, JJ is deploying his fan self-preservation mechanism and won't say it, but I'll ask you, is this now their title to lose in the league?
Is JJ playing the old double bluff one that they can't, there's no way Liverpool can win the league now, there's no way. This just can't happen. He's in denial.
That's exactly what's happening, because it's to protect oneself against when it finally falls to pieces.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, look, it's never going to be easy, right? And obviously, you know, it was a huge game. I forgot when it was now, a few days ago, the Manchester City game, which was a highly entertaining game, boys. But it went against Liverpool. It was close. That gap could have been 10 points to Man City, 9 to Tottenham at the time, but it's not. It's 4 points, and it is what it is. But... It really is a live scenario, and I do think the only thing for me is for Liverpool is horrendous injuries. If they, particularly in the fullback areas or the centre half area where they've already got some injuries, I think that could derail them. But if they don't, if nothing drastic happens, I really think they can go all the way, because apart from City, I see them rolling over most of the other teams, if not all of the other teams, home and away, and therefore City would probably might have to go somewhat close to being unbeaten or a winning streak all the way to the end of the season, which is going to be tough to do. So it's a good position to be in, but you know, Jurgen Klopp and the guys know that it's a lot of hard slog to go, but I would be confident, barring, as I say, a real spate of bad injuries.
Craig, I think it was Paul Merson, JJ and I talked about this last week, but I think it was him that I saw said that basically Liverpool should bag the Champions League.
And Gary Neville. Gary Neville said the same.
Gary Neville said it too.
And he said it in August.
Yeah, and just focus everything now on winning the league. Now, it seems like they maybe kind of sort of did that with the FA Cup the other day, but the Champions League, I don't know. That doesn't sit well with me. How would you think if Liverpool put out like a weakened squad in a round of 16 Champions League match?
No, I don't, because I think that I really, and I can semi-understand it in the FA Cup. We've had all these discussions on our show, and a lot of people discussing the FA Cup about managers fielding weakened teams, some in relegation, some going for titles, some trying to get up from the Championship. Even ones in mid-table like Leicester are doing it, which I personally thought was a disgrace, because they're not going to get relegated and they're probably not going to get in the Europa League. But what does that matter in the big scheme of things? But I don't believe you should be doing that when you're fighting for a Champions League and the Premier League, for two reasons. One, I just think it goes clearly against the whole the whole morals of what you're trying to achieve. And secondly, you're leaving yourself open to the biggest can of worms. If Jurgen Klopp, for example, bags the Champions League and says, like you've mentioned, some pundits have said, and plays weakened teams and they go out, and then something happens and they get derailed in the Premier League and they lose that as well, he is going to get absolutely killed. He is going to get absolutely killed by supporters and by the media. But if he goes for both and they come up a little bit short, well, you know, I don't think too many people are going to be calling for his head or anything stupid like that. So I just don't understand that. And look, they've got a big enough squad to do both. And you know, and I saw an old one of the old Liverpool players that I follow on Twitter, and you'll hear him on commentaries, Jim Beglin, who's a very good co-commentator and I think a very sound judge, saying, how did we get past in the old days with small squads playing every game of the season and playing in Europe as well? So, you know, we're asking about now, we're now talking about two competitions for Liverpool, two of the biggest competitions, one domestically, which they haven't won, albeit for a long, long time, I understand that, and then the Champions League, which is Europe's elite competition. You do not forfeit any of them, in my opinion, not with the squad Liverpool got, and not with the manager Liverpool got, and not with the support Liverpool got. I think they demand a little bit better than that.
Craig, it's not that long ago, seeing as we're on the subject, since you played, and I know you're going to make some, you know, self-deprecating quip about it's a long time ago, but imagine when you were at Chelsea putting out a weakened team in the FA Cup. Now, that is happening across the board, as you pointed out, with even mid-table teams like Leicester. Mm-hmm. So, and I know this is a debate that's going on, and I'm not sure what the answer is, and I've seen one article that said, just scrap the cup, it's archaic, it's done. But how would you go about fixing it? Would you incentivize it with cash? Would you, actually, I don't know beyond that what you could do, because it's limited in terms of European places, but is the cup fixable?
It could be somewhat adjusted, I think. I've not, to be honest, JJ, I've not really given it a whole lot of thought, but Steve Nicol on our show last night suggested that the winner go into the Champions League. Now, that's not going to happen because they won't give up the fourth spot. It's a valid point, but it won't happen because it won't go. We won't give up the fourth spot in the Premier League. There's the other side of the coin about, you know, killing replays. Then smaller clubs might lose money. Then there's another scenario where you might say, right, the Premier League teams have to play away from home, no matter who they're drawn against, and maybe rounds 3 and 4, if they're drawn against teams in leagues below them. So there are, you know, and I'm just sort of throwing that out there. So there are some scenarios the FA may look at to try and aid and abet the cup competition. I mean, the staggered kickoffs are certainly not helping, for sure. And to go back to your original point, in the mid-90s, when I was lucky enough to play in 3 semi-finals and reaching 2 finals, one of which we lost against Manchester United in 94, I can tell you, and all through that period, not once did we play, and we weren't, listen, we weren't going for a league title, but we're also not fighting relegation. But not once did Glenn Hoddle or then Ruud Gullit, our manager, ever play anything other than the strongest team he had available to him at that time. Not once. Not in one, and not that 3-year period or 4-year period, not in any round, in any year, did we play a weakened team. Not once. The league position never came into the equation about team selection. Never, ever, ever. But it seems now that league position is very much at the forefront of managers' thinking, even for championship teams. I mean, we've got now championship sides leaving players out in the FA Cup,
yeah,
just in case they get injured and they won't get promotion to the Premier League and get that big pot of gold. So I can see how it's difficult for the FA to try and keep the competition as relevant as it was years ago, which is not quite at the moment.
Craig Burley joining us here on Caught Offside. Craig, I wanted to ask you about the Christian Pulisic move to Chelsea. I found it to be interesting, yeah, because I just wonder about a club spending that kind of money on a guy who, and I know I'm really oversimplifying this, but on a guy who had been reduced to a sub And meanwhile, Chelsea may be getting ready to send a young player from within their own system to Bayern Munich on a major money deal. I mean, do you believe that some of these big clubs, with I guess the exception of Spurs, are too unwilling to give their own young players a chance right now?
Well, that is an argument at Chelsea, isn't it? And, you know, one of the, I've seen the thing about Hudson-Odoi leaving to go to Bayern Munich potentially, and, you know, just saying, well, they, you know, Chelsea are one of the worst, apparently, according to some out there, giving kids a chance. And you know, here we have, I think there is a reluctance because of the, for several clubs, because of the pressure on managers for instant success. Not all clubs are the same. The one thing I would say about the Pulisic thing, which has been, as you boys will well know, was very much the hot topic over the last 7 days. And, you know, all the usual people raised their head, particularly with myself, calling me an anti-American hater and all that, because I may have had an opinion on it, which wasn't a bad opinion. I certainly pointing out fact amongst all the sort of rah-rah-rah, waving the American flag, you know, this is going to be great, Christian Pulisic brigade. The things to look, watch here, if we get back to that point, Andrew, is one, and I've always said he's a fantastic talent, and he looks like a very level-headed young man, and he seems that, which is great. There is no doubt in his talent. However, some of the things coming out of it that have been leaking out are slightly worrying for this move, which I've been pointing out in the show, which is, for some reason, has irked some of the USA fans, is one, Sarri didn't know about the transfer going through, and is two, is Christian Pulisic himself saying, I really want to play under Maurizio Sarri. Well, I mean, you have to be living on the moon if you don't know what Chelsea's record of turnover of managers is. Now, if Maurizio Sarri, I think Maurizio Sarri will be there next year until at least next summer, when then if he doesn't have any success or no tangible success, he'll probably be out of a job. Now, if they finish sixth this season, for example, which I don't think they will, but if, say, they were to finish sixth this season and things, they didn't get a striker in January, and Morata continued to be a flop, who's to say that Roman Abramovich won't cut Maurizio Sarri loose this summer? I mean, I don't think it will happen, but it's not so left field that it'll never happen. And then Christian Pulisic is coming in, and there's a different manager. So, and then he's got to work his way into the team, and Hazard's still there, and everybody's telling me he's going, but you never know. And then Hudson-Odoi might be there. Then Willian's still there, and Pedro's still there, and they're older guys, and I get that. But even if they do move on, Chelsea will probably bring other people in. And so, when you look at it in a broader picture and get away from the sort of, you know, the stars and stripes sort of tinted glasses, then it's a great move for the lad, but it has many, many pitfalls. And I think you've got to take those into consideration when making a move like that. Of course, it could go great for him, and it might do, and I hope it does. But there are many, many pitfalls with trying to win your place in the team and then try to hope and figure out who's going to be managing that football club. And none of those things Christian Pulisic or you and I can answer at this moment in time.
Craig, Tim Weir, Celtic.
Yes.
Thoughts. I can I just give you my thought first, and I'd be interested to hear yours. I actually think this is, I mean, he should get minutes. I think it's a good move, and I think it could be set up for him to make an impact in what appears to be a title race. Do you see a downside to the move?
No, because for exactly that reason, JJ, he's a young, talented guy who's been at PSG. He got some minutes in pre-season, but obviously getting more minutes during the season is tough. Here's a club in Celtic that's a great club, as you know. It's a fantastic stadium, big crowds every second week, particularly when at home. There is a title race this year because Steven Gerrard's Rangers have put the points together. They haven't been playing great, but they've managed to put some points together. They've signed some players, and particularly Jermaine Defoe, who are fit, will score goals. So Celtic have somewhat of a challenge at the moment, having lost the last Celtic Rangers game around the new year. So here you have a young guy coming in who, as you said, will probably get enough game time and enough opportunity that he can make potentially an impact. Now, what's he going to get in Scottish football? He's going to get a Celtic team that like to play a nice, attractive style. He's going to get a Celtic team that dominate most games, you know, maybe kind of similar to PSG, maybe 70% possession of that. So he's going to get, if he plays, he's going to get chances. he's going to get a platform. And he's going to learn a little bit about himself when he plays, particularly at Celtic Park, because I've got had that experience. And when things are going well there, it's great. And when things are not going so well, the crowd let you know. So he's going to get the experience of playing and sampling the crowd and sampling the atmosphere and the pressure. And I think for Brendan Rodgers, for Celtic, and for the young lad Wee himself, I think it's just a win-win all round.
Craig, last one from me. I think it was Mark Ogden that had a story earlier today about Solskjaer at United, and he basically says that no matter what happens the rest of the season, Solskjaer is not getting that job on a permanent basis. I think he says Pochettino and Allegri still seem to be the top choices. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, it does make sense to me because I'm just moving around the house here before the dog starts barking. You know, I don't think I've ever been on your podcast without mentioning my dog.
No, it's never happened, and we wouldn't want it to happen.
And yet, I don't think we know the dog's name.
Barney, as in the Flintstones.
Oh, I like that.
Barney. But I just saw my wife coming down the drive in the car, which now means the dog is going to go bananas. So I've had to move because he gets very excited. Not that I don't look after him. I mean, I take him a walk once a year, but the wife walks him relentlessly. So to get back to your sort, I'll tell you what my reasoning would be, Andrew, for Solskjaer. And listen, he's done great, but let's be fair. They've played the dregs of English football so far. So they've got Tottenham coming up, and then they've got a few harder games. So we'll learn a bit more about them. But he's put a smile back in the face. But let's be honest. You could have brought anybody in there that had put the smile back in the face because it was such a miserable camp. And bringing Mike Phelan back in, I think, has been arguably the most important thing they've done. But the reason I don't see, and the only reason if Solskjaer gets the job, if the emotion takes over and the fans start all getting over emotional and Ed Woodward goes all giddy about it and thinks, oh, I'll just appease the fans here. Because I tell you why, you look at what Liverpool are doing, you look at what City are doing, you look at what Chelsea might do, you look at what Arsenal might do, you look at what Tottenham are doing. And then you've got, that's even before you get to Europe. It's a big bridge to get across. It's a big overhaul that United need. Now, albeit he's getting results and he may get results between now and the end of the season, but are you trusting a guy who has no experience, real experience, and has, you know, had a nightmare at Cardiff with the overhaul of Manchester United? I mean, I just don't see it. And I don't get the and I don't know if you guys have seen this, but quite a few people have said to us on our FC show and have said to me on Twitter, well, you know, you know, it's all very well saying, you know, you're Solskjaer, but you're so ignorant. You don't remember that Pep did it at Barcelona and Zidane did it at Real Madrid. And I'm thinking, good grief. Are we really putting those in the same category? I mean, whilst Pep had some real hard work to do at Barcelona, he had Iniesta, he had Xavi, he had Busquets, he had Puyol, he had Messi, Eto'o. You know, he had all these guys. And when Zidane took over from Benitez, it wasn't a very happy camp. But he had a squad of the greatest footballers on the planet, with Ronaldo and Modric and Ramos and Benzema and Bale, the list goes on, Kroos. Manchester United don't have any of those. They have Paul Pogba, who's rejuvenated and smiling again, thank God, and they've got some decent players, but they haven't got the Barcelona players, they haven't got the Real Madrid players, so the scenarios don't match up. They just don't. You know, whatever happens between now and the end of the season, Manchester United need an overhaul of players. And you need somebody that knows the business and knows what they're doing. And to get over emotional, in my opinion, and appoint somebody who is tugging on the heartstrings of the supporters in the club and has done well in a short period to oversee the dragging back of two of England's top sides at the moment, Liverpool and Manchester City, before you even get to Europe, no. I just don't see that at all. I'm sorry.
I think I'm just projecting because I'm just so afraid that they're going to take Pochettino from Spurs.
Well, that's
so
exactly
right. Like, I'm just rooting for Solskjaer to win everything at this point.
Are you sick of this Pochettino stuff as well?
Because of course.
You know, I can understand Tottenham fans. I can. And, you know, whenever he's mentioned and, you know, and he goes to a press conference, I can understand it. And listen, hey, I don't know if he's going to leave Tottenham or not, Andrew, but it might not be Man United if he does leave.
Well, he's the lead candidate, it seems, for every job on earth. Like, you know, Real Madrid, it still gets talked about, and now it's Manchester United, and it's just, it's exhausting.
It is exhausting, and listen, we can sit and talk about quotes about staying at clubs for the next 20 years and want to spend my life here, and we've all heard it all before, and listen, I'm as guilty as anybody. You know, when I was playing, if you get a better offer, your head's turned. And that's just the nature of the business. And, you know, he's already made some noises about spending at Tottenham. You know, we've got talk about Christian Eriksen, who's been looked at by, you know, one or two of the top clubs around Europe, particularly Real Madrid. You've got Harry Kane, who's, you know, the apple of everybody's eye. You know, and Pochettino will know these things. So, it's a very, very, as nice as it is at Spurs at the moment, they're playing some great stuff, they're in a good position. It's a very delicate situation because if one of those dominoes falls, the rest could start to tumble behind it. So Daniel Levy is going to be under some real pressure in the next 3 or 4 months to make the right move.
Well, good stuff, man. We hope your head's not turned. We hope you stay at ESPN forever. We love having you on. Although I suppose we could do that no matter where you are, but still.
Well, I'm not sure they feel the same way, but I'll try my best. You know, somebody's got to work with Dan Thomas. You know?
Good stuff, man. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, boys. Cheers.
So, Craig, feeling good about where?
Yeah, that's good. I mean, it's pretty much what we said, right?
Yeah.
When that was just a rumor that, like, it's the perfect situation because he'll play, and it's like the heat and intensity of a title race between two huge rivals. Craig talked about how, you know, the pressure at Celtic Park.
It could be the making of the boy.
Yeah. No, really. I think it's really good.
Gun to your head.
Yeah.
Better signing. Which will work out the better signing? So look, there's a gun to your head, but you're also looking in your crystal ball.
There's a lot of things happening.
You don't want to get blood in the crystal ball is what I'm saying. Defoe for Rangers, Weah for Celtic.
Defoe for Rangers.
Who turns out to be the key signing?
This isn't necessarily me saying Rangers will win the title, right, but I think Defoe will potentially play more a role for Rangers than whatever Weah contributes at Celtic.
That's interesting.
Would you have not thought that? You can't picture Defoe as just like
I'm just wondering, he's
super sub.
Of course I can. And I think he can still score goals up there. I'm just wondering, will he have the service around him? And B, how rusty is he from not really being involved with Bournemouth?
We'll see.
It's going to be interesting.
You have a mailbag?
I have. It's a very short mailbag.
Oh.
We're going to do it because I just want to. @CSArchipod on Twitter, caughtoffsidepod@gmail.com. Jamie Cameron kicks us off. I am a displaced South Londoner now living in Minneapolis, looking forward to the Loons' new stadium opening in 2019. I grew up as a kid.
It looks amazing, by the way. I wanted to mention that on the last podcast.
Does it? I have not seen pictures.
It really looks great.
Okay. I grew up as a kid on the late 90s EPL. I lost touch with the game for about a decade, but interest was reignited by the World Cup. I've heard lots of talk and read lots of good writing about US soccer using analytics and starting to watch the MLS EPL again. Can you recommend the best starting points, websites, resources for folks versing themselves in soccer analytics who aren't yet familiar? Appreciate all the great work. Now, we would not be the biggest users of soccer analytics, but
we don't shun it, though.
No, not at all. I would follow Michael Calley @MC_of_A on Twitter. Michael Calley or Michael Goodman
on
Twitter.
Yeah, that was going to be my recommendation.
Those two
as well.
Guys, yeah. And StatsBomb is a good website for soccer stats, and so is 538 when those guys write for it. It's pretty good. You agree with all of that?
Yeah.
That's good. Those are good starts. Let me see. Martin Mulcahy. I am torn as a fan of German football. He's talking about Liverpool, Man City. I love Sané's goal, but hated the loss for Klopp and former Bundesliga players on Liverpool, but really enjoyed the game. If Liverpool were not to win the EPL title, and I am rooting for them, will this go down in history as the 11mm season like the slip in 2014? Can that sliver of a ball have the same effect? Great podcast as always. What do you think?
Well,
It absolutely can, but we have to see. I hate doing this, but now you're in the case where you've seen Liverpool defeated in two games, and now you see them go to Brighton, and you are questioning how that's going to work out. And it's game by game, and I really hope we're not talking about a sliver of a ball when it comes to it.
Yeah.
I don't think we will be.
So you think that will be the game then that it all turned?
No.
Like we'll look back on that. Because the Chelsea, what the slip was so late in the year.
Yeah, the slip was absolutely fundamental to what happened.
Right. There's so much that would happen between now and then if they were to cough up a 4-point lead.
Yeah, a defeat at Brighton is going to have much, or a draw at Brighton will have much more to do than the 11 millimetres. And finally, Paul Risdell. I'm fine with paying for NBC Gold, but I'm already a devoted fan. This is actually a great take by Grant. I'm pretty sure at JJ Devaney agrees wholeheartedly. So Grant Wall tweeted this out today, a little video from his SI Video Studios. Stop putting live soccer rights behind additional paywalls. Soccer hasn't grown nearly enough in the US to shut out new fans with barriers to watching games.
I almost made him my man of the match for having that take.
But we regularly say this.
Oh, yeah.
Stop making it harder to watch the
game.
Look,
I talked about on our Boxing Day podcast how frustrating it was that they picked out City, Tottenham, was it Chelsea? Like, a few of the most marquee clubs in the league were behind that paywall on Boxing Day when you have one of the biggest audiences of the year. They knew what they were doing.
Yeah, and that's not good. That is just...
Look, they're trying to make money. I understand
they're
that.
They're mendacious.
A capitalistic society. We approve of all that, but like...
Listen, Dr. Chomsky, the bottom line is they're about making money, but it's our game. And they want to grow the game. Everybody can have a piece of the pie.
People love to say it's our game. I mean,
it's a nice thing to say.
Is that still true?
You've got to start thinking of it as that. You've got to. Honestly, or else it's over. It is over.
I think that ship is... Once TV contracts started costing what they cost for the Premier League, you were talking to me earlier today about the new White Hart Lane. You know, good for them to build a new stadium. They still think that Skybox and suites matter. Once the TV deal with Sky Sports kicked in, none of that means anything anymore. It's all about TV money.
Right.
That's changed everything now. That's what matters. What's best? What's in the best interest of the TV
company?
Well,
no, that Spurs being super greedy by wanting to get NFL money in as well.
Well, as long as it helps the club. That's what it's all about. Is that it for the
mailbag? Yeah, that's the truncated mailbag because you're going to lose your mind.
Well, we're going super long here. Let's see. A quick what to watch for. I only have three games this weekend. Saturday, 12:30, Chelsea and Newcastle. Kind of a Rafa derby of sorts.
I knew you were going to say that. I don't think that really works, does it?
I don't really associate him as a Chelsea manager.
They never loved him, even though he helped deliver a Europa League.
Yeah, that's true.
Never loved him.
Let's see. Sunday, 11:30. This is an interesting one. Craig mentioned this before when we were talking about Solskjaer. Tottenham and Manchester United at Wembley.
This could have been the Solskjaer derby. He was always linked with going to Spurs.
Well, it's interesting because of what Craig said, that it's been kind of a cakewalk in terms of who the opponents are for Manchester United so far. Now it gets a little more difficult. Spurs on the road.
A little more difficult.
Yeah, and we remember the reverse fixture earlier this season, 3-0 at Old Trafford, the game that you ruined for me by telling me the score, even though I'd asked you not to.
We'd all had a few drinks.
We all? No, you. You might or might not have a problem. This is going to be Son's last match before he leaves for the Asian Cup. He's been in scorching hot form, maybe not as much against Chelsea the other day, but he feels terrible. I was reading about how he leaving the club right now and his thoughts on it, and just he said he felt awful about it, but you know, this was the deal that they struck. He was going to leave at this point for that tournament, and I will now be rooting against South Korea
so he can return as quickly as possible.
And then Monday at 3 o'clock, what we were talking about before, Wolves, they will be at Manchester City.
The Nouveau Riche Derby.
Yeah. Very nice. Oh, let's see now.
Red card.
Would you like to go first?
Yes, may I? Blackpool ownership. Franny Rue tweeted us over the weekend. I am watching the Arsenal match. The half-empty ground at Blackpool is odd to see. The Blackpool fans really seem to hate the owner. It seems like there are only Arsenal fans there. So the owner is Owen Oyston, 85-year-old Owen Oyston, and I need to show you a picture of him.
Yeah, please.
I need you. And please describe it for people.
Let's see.
I've got a description in my head.
Like a 90-year-old. Oh man, who's the singer that I'm thinking of? Oh, if you said it, I would know it right away.
I think
D.
Who are you trying to think
D
of?
D something with an S. Snyder, is it? I'm going
to
look it up.
Oh my God. All right. While you look it up, I would tell people to try and imagine, how would we put it?
Yeah, I was right. It looks like a 90-year-old D. Snyder.
Okay. I was thinking of what's the actor?
Twisted Sister, by the way. It was his band.
What's the actor from The Boxer?
From the boxer?
Not the wrestler. Excuse me, the wrestler.
Mickey Rourke?
Rourke. So imagine Mickey Rourke at 85 wearing Johnny Depp's clothes. That is Owen Oyston. But that's his sartorial elegance is beside the point.
So what is your red card here?
He is the main reason behind the empty stands at Bloomfield Road. And Jack Gawen in the Daily Mail last week outlined the many problems at Blackpool that all lead to the door of Oyston, the owner. It's quite something. So he's written, Fedora enthusiast Oyston owed former director Valeri Belican around £25 million and still does after an acrimonious High Court battle for unfair prejudice. A judge ruled in November 2017 that Oyston had illegitimately stripped the Seasiders, something the pensioner vehemently denies despite all logic and proof. Oyston has passed up two opportunities of loans to repay his debt, of which up to now he has paid £10 million of the £34 million sterling owned, according to the final judgment. And so Blackpool is a club in limbo, desperate for change, with no money. The ground is 9/10 empty most weeks, only swollen by away support. A small portion attend, but the majority do not, after a four-year-long Not a Penny More campaign has been successful in financially squeezing an owner they have despised for nearly three decades. For away games, the team stay at hotels, but they, in one case it was 47 miles from the team they were playing.
Oh my God.
Yeah, in an effort to save money. This is the one thing for me. The team are training at Squires Gate, which is a really old training ground, after training in three different places this season alone. Four players twisted their ankles during the first week back at Squires Gate. The sand filling deep holes in the ground was not robust enough. A local grave digger, roped in on the cheap, helped fill them in, but quit after a few days because the job was miserable.
A grave digger.
In the summer, Oyston, who likes to top up his tan, climbed up on the Jimmy Arfield stand and sunbathed on top of the stand at Bloomfield Road.
I don't know. Seems like a pretty normal guy to me.
The club's a mess.
Rich people really are just like us, aren't they?
They couldn't afford. If you noticed during the Arsenal game, the pitch looked burnt and cut up. Yeah. They couldn't afford to put over the protection that's needed to go on top of the field. They can't afford to do that anymore. It just goes to show you, anyone who's watching Sunderland Till I Die right now, the owner's not the same, obviously. This guy has different issues to what Ellis Short had with the club, who decided to stop investing. But the net result is the same. The fans always suffer. The club always suffers.
Yep. Speaking of suffering, JJ, my red card goes to the medical staff at the under-20 match between Flamengo and Trinidad AC.
Oh, I saw this.
Bernardo of Trinidad went down with an injury. Apparently it was serious enough that a medical cart had to drive out onto the pitch to assist him. However, as the cart approached him, the driver ran over Bernardo's foot. Now, here's the odd thing about it. I'm going to play for you the audio of the incident. It's in Portuguese.
Oh, that'll be helpful.
But I'd like you to guess at what point the cart is running over his foot, just based on the announcers and their reaction here. Here you go.
Preparou a capa de chuva aí, Brizola?
Sempre, é sempre uma emoção, né?
The laughter. The laughter.
When, like, a cart goes over his foot.
Yeah, it was hilarious to everybody, including the driver or the guy next to the driver who jumps out of the cart and saw what happened. And he's cracking up while the player is like, you saw the video. Bernardo is writhing in pain after whatever the initial injury was, then a cart running over his foot. Now, in the end, I'm okay making light of this because it did turn out that Bernardo was fine. He actually came back on and finished the game and they did win 1-0. But in the moment, like, I don't know if that's, like, is that okay to be laughing? Everyone, like, having a good laugh at that?
I remember United played Gothenburg in Sweden in a Champions League game. And it was old school stretchers. Two people come on and they picked up, I think it was Brian McClair. One guy went one way, one guy went the other. Drop McClair.
Oh, boy.
Caught offsides, man of the match.
What do you got?
Quick one. Jeff Carlisle is my man of the match for his piece on Ben Lederman. Barcelona's first ever American La Masia signing and his circuitous football journey, which finds him at Ghent in Belgium right now. I think it illustrates the tough road that following a professional football dream can bring on both player and, in Lederman's case, his family. Lederman was profiled by the New York Times a few years ago when he was only 13 about that move to Barcelona. Jeff talks about his career, what happened at Barcelona. Really good piece on ESPN FC right now. You got to read it. I'm not going to ruin it.
Haven't seen it yet, but I look forward to reading it. I love to read. not as much as you. My man of the match goes to Mohamed Salah, JJ.
Oh, he's wonderful,
isn't
he?
Took home the African Player of the Year award, beating out Sadio Mane and Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. It's the second straight year in which Salah has won the award. Obviously won the Golden Boot in the Premier League. 13 goals so far this season. Still only 26 years old. God, it feels like he's older than that. And in addition to that, it was a good day overall for Egypt, as it was also announced that they'll host the 2019 Africa Cup of Nations. That's right, the 2019 Africa Cup of Nations, like a few months from now. It's the fifth time that they'll host it. They last hosted in 06, and they went on and won the thing. Cameroon, here's why it's being announced now, because things like this are usually, obviously, years in the making.
Sure.
Cameroon was supposed to host it, but they were stripped of it back in November because of slow preparations. So Egypt and South Africa threw their names in the ring, two countries that are developed enough that they could obviously handle something like this on relatively short notice. It was awarded to Egypt in a pretty easy vote, and now they have just 5 months to prepare for the expanded 24-team tournament, which it is now. Mo Salah said he was retiring from Egyptian football after the World Cup when things just went horribly. Do you think that will still be the case now with the Africa Cup of Nations on his own home soil this summer?
I think he said he considered retiring. I don't think he can.
Oh, retire. Did he not actually retire?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, so then you think he'll play?
I think he will play, and I think he's under immense pressure to represent his country as well. Yeah. We should mention as well, Aaron Ramsey of Arsenal has agreed a 5-year deal with Juventus worth £36 million sterling.
Wow. I knew that was one of those things that you heard rumors. I don't know, for some reason I just didn't think it was going to happen.
I know. We'll try and assess Ramsey's career for the next podcast. It's tricky.
Yeah. A lot of injuries, but a lot of promise. Sometimes recognizes his potential. Sometimes can't get into the starting 11. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know what he becomes now at Juve.
£140,000 sterling a week contract. Jeez. At Juve. Rumored.
Okay. Well, hey, this was fun, man. I enjoyed in the club. I don't know what you thought of it, but I thought at least Tim Spears was really good.
I like the concept.
Hate the open. Craig Burley, as always, one of our favorite people to speak with. Should be a fun weekend. Spurs United, I'm excited about that. Hey, good stuff, my friend. To you, I say...
Take you later, fun boy.
See ya.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.